Now, here is Moses as a black immigrant summing up his years in England at the end of the book and thinking about what he might have done or what he might not have done. Bringing out these elements of human experience. The changing of the seasons, the cold slicing winds, the falling leaves, sunlight on green grass, snow on the land, London particular. Oh, what it is and where it is and why it is, no one knows. But to have said, I walked on Waterloo Bridge, I rendezvoused at Charing Cross, Piccadilly Circus is my playground. To say these things, to have lived these things, to have lived in the great city of London, centre of the world. To one day lean against the wind walking up the Bayswater Road, destination unknown. To see the leaves swirl and dance and spin on the pavement, sight unseen. To write a casual letter home beginning last night in Trafalgar Square. What it is that a city have, that any place in the world have, that you get so much to like it, you wouldn't leave it for anywhere else. What it is that would keep men, although by and large, in truth and in fact, they're catching their royal to make a living, staying in a cramped-up room where you have to do everything, sleep, eat, dress, wash, cook, live. Why is it that although they grumble about it all the time, curse the people, curse the government, say all kind of thing about this and that, why it is that in the end, everyone cagey about saying outright that if the chance come, they will go back to them green islands in the sun. In the grimness of the winter, with your hand tying space like a blind man's stick in the yellow fog, with ice on the ground and a coolness defying all effort to keep warm, the boys coming and going, working, eating, sleeping, going about the vast metropolis like veteran Londoners. Nearly every Sunday morning, like if they're going to church, the boys liming in Moses' room, coming together for a old talk to find out the latest gen, what happening, when is the next fete, Bart asking if anybody see his girl anywhere, Cap recounting an episode he had with a woman by the tube station the night before, Big City want to know why the ass he can't win a pool, Galahad recounting a clash with a colour problem in a restaurant in Piccadilly, Harris saying he hope the weather turns, Five saying he have to drive a truck to Glasgow tomorrow. Always, every Sunday morning, they come into Moses like if it's confession, sitting down on the bed, on the floor, on the chairs, everybody asking what happening, but nobody like they know what happening, laughing kif-kif at a joke, waiting to see who would start to smoke first, asking Moses if he have anything to eat, the gas going low, why you don't put another shilling in, who have shilling, anybody have change? And everybody turning out their pockets for this shilling that would mean the difference between shivering and feeling warm and nobody having any shilling until conscience hit one of them and he say, "Aps, look, I have a shilling. It was right down in the bottom of my trousers pocket. That's why I didn't feel it." Every year he vowing to go back to Trinidad. But after the winter gone and birds sing and all the trees begin to put on leaves again, and flowers come, and now and then the old sun shining, is as if life start all over again, as if it still have time, as if it still have another chance. I will wait until after the summer does really be hard. One night of any night, lying on the embankment near to Chelsea, he stand up on the bank of the river, watching the lights of the buildings reflected in the water, thinking what he must do. If he should save up money and go back home, if he should try to make it by next year before he changes his mind again. The old Moses standing on the banks of the Thames. Sometimes he think he sees some sort of profound realization in his life, as if all that happened to him was experience that make him a better man, as if now he could draw apart from any hustling and just sit down and watch other people fight to live. Under the kif-kif laughter, behind the ballad and the episode, the what happening, the summer is hearts, He could see a great aimlessness, a great restless swaying movement that leaving you standing in the same spot. As if a forlorn shadow of doom fall on all the spades in the country. As if he could see the black faces bobbing up and down in the millions of white strained faces, everybody hustling along the strand, the spades jostling in the crowd, bewildered, hopeless. As if on the surface, things don't look so bad, but when you go down a little, you bounce up a kind of misery and pathos and a frightening what? He don't know the right word, but he have the right feeling in his heart.
All to the left, all to the right. because I think England's died. Because I think
to Greece. I was traveling with a friend of mine, a poetess named Penelope, and we were walking through the streets of Athens, and every place that we went, people would yell at us, "Hey, sheepy, sheepy, matala, matala," which means hippie, hippie, matala, matala, seek your own kind, there are lots of them there. And so we showed up in Matala, and me with creases down in front of my jeans from the dry cleaners. It was kind of unhip. I had to wait a couple of days to get a little more grimy and wrinkled before I was truly accepted by the society there. Penelope and I were sitting on the beach with creases down in the front of our jeans having this picnic. And she doesn't like to eat the crust of her bread, you know, she's kind of picky about some things like that. And me, I don't eat orange rinds, very seldom, you know. If you squeeze them together and light them, you know, they kind of burst into flame. That's interesting, but eating them, that's another trick, you know. So we had this little pile of litter that was accumulating. That and Mickey Mouse chocolate bars, because in Greece they had these great Mickey Mouse chocolate bars. It's like Mickey Mouse in Greek. And on the inside were all these training cards, and as far as we knew, there were 160 of them. It was Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse and Pluto and Pinocchio with his nose in several lengths, you know. And Cinderella and, well, there was everything. So I bought these chocolate bars, you know, just to kind of try them out before I realized that there was a whole cult sort of around them. So we picked up this little parcel of litter, you see, that we had lying on the beach, Mickey Mouse wrappers, orange peels, and bread crusts, and we followed the strains of the Beatles into this little restaurant called the Delfini Restaurant, and standing behind the counter there was this great-looking guy with a mane of red hair and a little gold heart in one ear and a little gold loop in the other ear and a soiled gray turban on his head, supposedly a white turban. I soaked it one night, overnight in a bidet in a pet zone in Athens, and was convicted. Trying to get all the grime of the East out of it. But this time we were strangers, and I handed him this pile of litter, and I said, "Listen, what can we do with this?" And he took it out of my hands, and with a really ferocious look, he threw it all over the floor of the Delfini restaurant. He was the cook there. So I liked him immediately, you know, and we became very good friends, and for his birthday, I gave him 10 Mickey Mouse chocolate bars, 8 of which had new trading cards that he didn't have yet, so he was very thrilled. And I made him up this tune, which goes, "Oh, Carrie, you're a mean old daddy, but you're out of sight." Mm-hmm. Africa. The sea is full of sheep. Oh, you know it's hard, it's hard to be. Down in the street. Now they got me used to that clean my bin and I'm a fancy French cologne. Oh, can we get out your cage? Oh, I'll put on my finest silver. I'll go to the mermaid cafe about tonight. I said, oh, pyramid, oh, daddy, but you're out of
some of us are poor with information. All of us can be rich. Our job, your job, is to rob the bank, to kill the guard. To go out there, to destroy everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Impediment in my Twitter finger. I tweet and retweet those characters of anger. Reply and I block it with smiling faces that erases the places on Facebook. I clock it like Flavor Flav in a fit of rage. Email in, post it and then delete it.
Social media ain't
complaining. Social media ain't social at all. But then you turn on and boot up and log in again. Repeat. Memes that seem to be mean are meant to be. You wonder.
And you ponder.
Intellect without instinct probably won't get horny. press ignore, ignore, or I accept. Inducing medicinal social effect. Woo woo, social media ain't shit. But I can cope. My Twitter finger is itching like I'm on dope. So I'm scratching at an itch out of reach. Bloggers are bitching, so I tweet, retweeting my speech impediment in my Twitter finger. I post characters of anger. Reply and I block it. Block it like Flavor Flav. Smiling faces, that is racist. Places on Facebook. Clock it like Flavor Flav. Lamping in a bit of rage. Post it. Trash it. Then delete and repeat. Delete and repeat. Complaining. Social media ain't shit. Reminding myself I did it all. I fall for it every time. You cross my mind. And I can't speak to you.
I fear no wicked people. Jah is control sin, for I fear no evil.
That's why John Lennon is dead. Nobody in the music business believes that Mark Chapman alone was responsible for the death of John Lennon. And then you notice that from the day that John Lennon dies, music becomes fake for 10 years. There's synthesizers, keyboards, fake instruments, songs about nothing but love. Everything becomes about how you look, the mad hairdos and the mad clothes and the whole distraction from the actual, you know, music moving you or changing you, you know. Even the artists who were quite politicized before John Lennon died, once John died, they came out of their rooms a bit more frightened and tended less to write songs that might be challenging to the establishment, you know. The last time that I would have thought music changed society was with the birth of rap. When NWA came along, they were like the Beatles in many ways. They changed the whole universe. Suddenly all the white kids were screaming, "F*** the police," you know? And that was very dangerous. The music industry is in fact afraid of music and the power that music has to change the world. So the industry worked very hard to silence rap and to mimic it with artists that were saying nothing, like Vanilla Ice, MC Hammer, all of these people, and then to demonize people like Public Enemy or NWA, you know. Eminem as well was a very important character. You know, he expressed a lot of the anger that sort of disenfranchised, for want of a better word, white kids were feeling, you know. He definitely changed the world a bit, yeah.
When I was young, toothbrushes in our house were only used to clean your boots. The end result of that was that by the 20s, the teeth in my head were so rotten that they'd gone green, and so I got the nickname Johnny Rotten. I liked the nickname Johnny Fucking Rotten, because he's dirty, he's got green teeth. It was a mould that grew in there. And I thought it was somehow attractive and, you know, a positive feature. No, that led to serious health issues. Everything was painful. Eye aches, headaches, blood poisoning, bone rot, which required filling with America's best cement. Just so many teeth had to go. I've only got one real tooth left in my head. Genuinely speaking, I'd like to think that I don't have to thank my teeth for nothing. It took nearly a year and a half of constant dental surgery. I should have braved it out way, way earlier. I noticed that I could wake up in the morning without feeling completely terribly poisoned. The teeth were doing that to me. And it's a horrible thing to have to admit to, but, you know, take care of yourself, or else you'll end up like me. Rich and famous.
Can't even rest. It's hard to maintain the pressure on my chest. Excess frustration strikes. Blood rushes my head when I come across ropes with dead mics and whack promoted shows. It's hard, but with the presence of God, I'm true to the game. So I'm back, black to take charge and recap. Sure, the time when shit can never be whack. I'm pure. I insert my lifeline into the track. The energy in me is the poison, but no unrevealed remedy. I'm spreading like leprosy throughout the record label, cause mine's put me and my career in jeopardy. Can you come see me in the ghetto where it's dark? Well, it's a real lost piece, lurks in the heart. Lord knows it hurts. We kick the hurts to the curb, execute first things first, and put blunted minds to work. My hurt side and my fam support, so I'm mine for the time being, seeing peace, but taking no short, no short.
Stress, yeah, stress, crush, will destroy.
godless creature down to the bone, running to the devil on the way home. He had to find more trouble, burst his bubble, write another ending to a heartbreak novel.
Your life is a vanity project. Your life is a vanity project.
Life is a vanity project. Dreaming of shit we ain't got yet. We see cocaine fools fall from stools. Hashtag in what's hot next. Ice on my wrist, yeah, I got that. Advertising can't stop that. They be feeding us lies, keeping us blind with minimum human contact. Trying to make high street zombies with that Prada, Gucci and Fendi. But see, vanity and sanity is damaging to families, although rather tempting.
Your life is a vanity project. Your life is a vanity project.
Godless creature down to the bone, all messed up, can't find his way home. Are you telling me you got the cure, boy? 6 years, 13 days, and counting.
Ticket to way. Tell all your friends they can go my way. Pay your toll, sell your soul. Pound for pound costs more than gold. The longer you stay, the more you pay. My white lines go a long way. Either up your nose or through your vein. With nothing to gain except killing your brain.
White Lines is a record about the use and abuse of cocaine. But it is good that people know that when they do get high, you know, I can't tell people what to do, but at least when they do it, they know that they're doing the wrong thing to their body and as far as society and whatnot. So that's why we made the record, you know, in good faith. It's a real touchy subject, but somebody had to do it, so we did it. Rapping in the street a long time ago, in about 76, 75, something like that. It's great business. The subculture of rapping, you know, you have a little bit of everything. You have break dancers, graffiti, you know, all types of people. You know, it's like a real free spirit, you know, and I'm a free spirit, so you know, you gotta go where it flows.
How you getting around?
In the rapping?
Yeah.
Or just rapping in the street a long time ago, in about 76, 75, something like that. It's great business. The subculture of rapping, you know, you have a little bit of everything. You have break dancers, graffiti, you know, all types of people. You know, it's like a real free spirit, you know, and I'm a free spirit, so you know, you gotta go where it flows. 76, 75, something like that. It's great business. The subculture of rapping, you know, you have a little bit of everything. You have break dancers, graffiti, you know, all types of people. You know, it's like a real free spirit.